The following audio is additional studio chat with Pastor Charles Gross, who was a clerk for the 1st Technical Service Detachment responsible for the assembly of the atomic bombs dropped on Japan in the summer of 1945.
There's been a lot in the news about nuclear disarmament. President Obama and Hillary Clinton have recently signed a treaty with Russia to reduce nuclear arms. What do you think about those today who want to completely eliminate all nuclear arms?
Well, in one way, it certainly would be good not to have another atom bomb dropped. But on the other hand, if that is the only way to win a war, it can be justifiable. We do fight smaller wars with smaller weapons. To not have any weapons would invite disaster, especially if nations are weak and the enemy is strong. We need to defend ourselves. Just perhaps the threat of atom bomb would be a deterrence to war.
Certainly ended the war with Japan rather quickly, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Even though they did have a little time of negotiation on the Japanese side, whether or not to surrender, but America's gave them time. While the bomb was dropped on August 6 and August 9, the treaty wasn't signed until September 2 in the Bay of Japan, and where General MacArthur was one of the men who signed the pact of ending the war.
Little did Japan know that we only had two bombs. They were under pressure, from what I've read, that we could have had a whole arsenal of them.
Yes, exactly. A third bomb could have come probably within a couple of weeks. They would fly from the United States, what they call the hot stuff, and they could assemble it in 3 days after it got there. Fortunately, it did not come. And I think America diplomacy worked in that they allowed the Japanese rulers to negotiate and to come to a decision to totally surrender to the United States.
The Korean conflict was also ended by actually the threat of a nuclear war. It's come to light many years later that actually Truman went to North Korea and said, if you do not end this war, we're going to start using nuclear weapons. That didn't come out to many years later, and that's why the parallel, 52 parallel, is there today, because that war was also ended by the threat of nuclear weapons.
Well, I didn't hear that. Doesn't mean it's not true. But what I did hear is that President Truman was very disappointed with General MacArthur. General MacArthur wanted to go after the Chinese who were coming across the border, and Truman said no, and Truman was fired, and then MacArthur was fired, and in defense, MacArthur said, there's no substitute for victory. And from that point on, we have lessened the thought of being totally victorious or bringing the enemy to its knees. We've had compromise from then on in our military operations.
And I think that comes out of the worldview of many on the left, where they misunderstand the nature of sin and what needs to be done to hinder sin in the world. There is also an aspect that most people don't consider, the merciful nature of the way the United States dropped the bomb. It could have been dropped on Tokyo.
Yes.
It could have been dropped on larger cities. It was dropped on these smaller industrial cities. And then, as you mentioned, they waited for a response from Japan before they continued. Was there any response from Japan after the dropping on Hiroshima?
No, that was when they waited. It wasn't until they had the 1-2 punch that the Japanese realized that this was really serious, and there could be, as you said, other bombs that may come. They didn't know what bombs were available. So that is a factor there that that Japan had to really struggle with. It was a real struggle for Emperor Hirohito to admit that he was no longer God. And it was devastating for the people to realize that, too. Their faith was in their God. And but, as I said, when they humbled themselves and realized that they could not go to war and win, that they was a turning point for their livelihood and eventually for the prosperity of their nation.
If we never dropped the bombs on Japan, how long do you think the war would have continued?
Well, the experts think that probably the war would continue for the end, for the rest of that year, that there would be an invasion of soldiers into Japan, be a mighty bloodbath, probably 500,000, maybe a million lives lost. But before the end of the year, certainly Japan would have lost the war then.
There was a mindset in Japan at the time that surrender was dishonorable.
Oh, yes.
And you would give up your life before you would surrender. And so it would have definitely been a bloodbath where, you know, the last man standing would have ended the war.
Yes, absolutely. There was such a great devotion to their gods, and to surrender would be the most dishonorable thing that they could ever do. I cannot prove this, but it would surprise me if there are any living today who were at that time experienced the drama on Tinian. I was only 19 at the time, and I was probably the youngest in that group. So it is a very rare thing that anyone living today could also be on Tinian at that time.
Have you had any reunions with that
No.
group?
No reunions. The only one I knew about through the papers was Colonel Tibbet, who went to Dayton, Ohio. But he's 10 years older than I, and I don't think he is living today. There's a false report about Colonel Sweeney, who dropped the bomb on Nagasaki, that he went insane. That's a false report. He did not. Someone interviewed him and all the crew, and he had 11 children. They weren't affected by radioactivity at all. And so, but there was a pilot on the plane who was reconnaissance plane, who did go berserk and had to have psychiatric treatment. But he was not the pilot. He was not the one who dropped the bomb.
I had heard those reports, but I thought that what they were talking about was the thought about doing that to so many people.
Yeah, well, the report went out for the papers was a wrong report. It wasn't the pilot who dropped the bomb on Nagasaki, but it was a reconnaissance plane that was with them. And he said that he dropped the bomb, and everybody believed him. You know, and so they put the report out, but actually he didn't. But he was there in formation with the other planes. And he's the one that went berserk and went to psychiatric hospitals. They even had stories that it was dropped by a parachute. You may have heard that one. And that was so utterly ridiculous. But they were looking, people were so hungry to know about this bomb, never heard it before. So they were looking to the media, you know, to supply the information. There was only one reporter that was over there in Tinian. He was Lawrence. His name was Lawrence from the New York Times. He was a scientific editor. And so he was there, and he interviewed the ones that went to Nagasaki, especially, and others. And he was a good reporter. In fact, I met him at one time. He has his copies he wanted me to send on the teletype to I don't know where, probably the New York Times. But he was the only reporter there. So, but they were able to grab him from the New York Times because they wanted a good reporter, and he was really good. But those false stories, they didn't come from him. They came from other sources because the people were so hungry to find out what's going on.
Well, I get a kick out of nowadays when some news story breaks that's really big.
Yeah.
You listen to five different news outlets, and you get five somewhat contradictory accounts.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, well, they can't all be true.
Describe how the bomb arrived and how it was loaded and transported.
Oh, the bomb came through a ship called the USS Indianapolis. I mean, with all the materials that had to be used to put it. And they dropped it off in Tinian. And on the way from Tinian to the Philippines, it was bombed by the Japanese. And over 900 sailors perished, and the sharks were everywhere.
But the bomb was on that boat.
The bomb was already released at Tinian, and then after released at Tinian, then it went to Philippines. Then there was bombed by the torpedoed by the Japanese
after it dropped the bomb off.
After, yeah, and what we think is that the Japanese must have had some intelligence that there was something on that ship. You know, that was very important to the United States, but they didn't know the details.
That it was dropped off at Tinian.
Yeah. Well, that's what we surmise. But not everyone was drowned in the waters when it was torpedoed. There were some that were spared, and I heard a report of one man who actually was a believer, and he told about the experience he went through.
Mm. But what happened after they unloaded the bomb at Antinium?
Oh, you mean Antinium?
Yeah, once it was unloaded and...
Well, that I don't know exactly, but they did have a certain place where these men of the 1st Technical Service Detachment to work on it. It took them 3 days to put it all together. Where that was, I don't know. That was probably top secret. Well, it was still top secret.
So you didn't even know when that plane was going to be taken. You didn't see the plane go off with the bomb.
No. That they took the Colonel Tibbett left at about 3 o'clock in the morning, I think it was, and he had to get to it was a 6-hour flight from there to 8:15 when he dropped the bomb, and so I think it was about 3 o'clock. Then he came right back. And when he came back, General LeMay was there to greet him, congratulate him. And there was a big congratulations on both flights. Team came back from the atom bomb. And they just went hysterical and had a big party, beer party and everything.
Send the bomb out, one guy called you out and said, would you like to sign, right?
Yeah.
Before that, though, when they dropped off the materials, did the people on the base know that something was up? Was there, like, heightened security? Or was the security just high because of the war anyway?
As far as I can know, no one had any idea that anything special was taking place. Because they had these pumpkins, and some were disappointed, had all this training just to drop these. These are just regular bombs, you know, fire bombs over Japan. Mm-hmm. And this was like a decoy, but also like a practice period of dropping the bombs, and maybe for the enemy to throw them off that this is really the only thing we're here for, just to drop these bombs. And so there was a Colonel Kirkpatrick who was in charge of all this, and one day he met with us and he told us that they were dropping these called pumpkins, but then he said something that this is preparation for another bomb. I mean, he didn't go into specifics. So we knew, those who were with him, knew that something big was in the works. Didn't know what.
Now, when they arrived back from dropping the first bomb, That's when you found out what actually happened.
Yeah, because
they
gave
the servicemen mentioned it to you, and
well, they gave me the report that I was to send on the teletype to General Groves in Washington, who was in charge of the Manhattan Project. Then he took it and he went directly to President Truman. Well, actually, Truman wasn't there at the time, but he took it to the, I think, the Secretary of State. Anyway, probably Secretary of State. So we did not go through military channels. You know, in the Army, you always taught you had to go through channels. You cannot skip over authority. But our outfit was skipped over everybody just directly to Washington. So when the war was over, I was able to come back earlier. At that time, they dismissed them by the points that you had. The more points you had, the quicker you could get out. I only had 19 points on how long you were in the service and so forth. But we left Japan by air. We went directly back to the States. Other guys, they had to wait and go on their ships. So we had special treatment. And one of the beautiful sights when he landed in Tokyo was to see Mount Fujiyama. It's a volcano. And it's all, everything else is level, but then this volcano. And when we flew in there that night, the sun was setting behind the volcano, and its rays were on both sides. It was a gorgeous, beautiful sight.
Oh, when did you fly into Tokyo?
When did I fly to Tokyo?
Yeah.
That was later in September after they signed the peace treaty, I guess that's what it's called, at the bay. And we were the first ones into Japan. And we did not, and the officer in charge did not know how we would be received. So he says, take your revolvers and have it all ready. You know, you may have to shoot. And fortunately, we didn't. And when we had the jeeps there, they brought the jeeps in, and we went from the airport to Tokyo. And the adults, Japanese adults, were way in the back. They were scared of us. They didn't know what to think of us. But the children were right out by the road, and they were just waving. They were so excited to see the Americans come in.
You had arrived in Tokyo to sign the peace treaty?
Well, that was on the ship in the bay.
So there was a whole armada of American ships that came into the bay.
I don't know. All I know is that General MacArthur was there, and he was the one who signed the peace treaty, and some representative of Japan. I don't know who it was.
So after the war, they sent you to go to Tokyo.
Yeah.
And your responsibility in Tokyo was?
Well, the purpose of going to Tokyo was to send men down to Hiroshima and to find out some of the results of the ones who were killed. So they went there to Hiroshima, and they found some body. They put in a can, preserved it in alcohol, and they brought it back to Tokyo. And one night, or one day, my job was to guard that tin box, of the remains, and make sure that nobody would steal it, because it's going to go back to the United States, and they were going to take it to the lab and test it to see some of the effects. So they nicknamed it the Geisha Girl. So I had to guard that Geisha Girl that night. Actually, of course, no one would want it anyway, you know.
Well, I don't know. You know, with the World Trade Center, there are people that just want to comb through the rubble for minute little pieces.
Well, this is a different age.
It is a different age, but I mean, a lot of people would want to, you know, bury their dead.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what the Japanese call it.
I don't know how they got the body or who got it, but anyway, that's why we went into Japan, into Tokyo. But the Japanese people were so polite. They would come to you, they'd always bow down, you know, and they would put San after my name. They say, Charlie San, you know. But then they would always warn us, well, now watch out, they'll bow down to you, but they may have a knife in their back, another knife, you know, on the back they're ready to ready to kill you or whatever. But they treated us very warmly, very nice.
From what I've heard, their government told them that if the Americans captured you, they would eat you.
Oh, really?
And so if they were really told that, I could see what, you know, you talk about the older folks.
Oh, I see.
Back, you know, if they really believe that lie,
yeah,
you know, they would be afraid to be alone with an American.
Yeah. But they were very immoral. In fact, the place where we stayed in Tokyo, there's a man there who had his daughter, and he had his daughter, he brought his daughter to me and says, well, you can sleep with her tonight. You know, that's how immoral they were. And I guess many soldiers did, but of course I didn't. I just didn't even think about it for a second. But I mean, that's how bold they were. And then they served us tea, and their tea was just like water. And I noticed when the Japanese went through the streets, the men would be in front, and the woman would be behind, maybe 10 or 20 feet, always walking behind the man, and she's the one that was carrying all the stuff, you know, dragging along, and he was way up in front. And then they had no propriety about where they would urinate. They had guys that, they'd always urinate right in the sewers, you know, right in the streets. And in the lavatories, they had just one lavatory. It's like unisex, you know, both men and women go in there, and men go on one side, and girls, ladies go on the other side. I mean, it was so shocking to me living in America.
Totally different culture.
That there was no sanitation, is just accepted, you know. And of course, they drove the jeeps on the left-hand side of the street, which was interesting. So I drove the jeeps there, and the left turn was easy, but the right turn you had to watch out for.
You don't have a copy of that communique, do you? The communique that you sent to Truman.
No.
You don't even remember what was in it.
There was one I received, I kept for a long time, I don't know where it went, but it's a report of a priest in Nagasaki who went to the city of Nagasaki after the bomb was dropped. It was a mission of mercy. He went there to see what good he can do, and he describes it much in detail of how terrible the situation was. I kept that for a long time, and my movie, and I don't know where it went. Another time we had a special meal in Tokyo, and the woman here waited on us, you know, and boy, we thought that was a great thing. They had silverware and all tablecloths, and for us guys in the service, this is great. But then the food they brought in was the same rations that we were eating anyway. We thought we'd have a big banquet or something.
Yeah, well, a lot of the servicemen probably would prefer that to what the Japanese would eat normally.
I think so.
I like different cultural foods, yeah. But I can't get these guys to go to Amravati's for Indian food.
Or sushi?
Draw the line somewhere. Yeah, well, you know, they were down to, you know, a real survival budget, you know, during the war, at the end of the war.
But
did you ever go to, now you didn't arrive, you did not go to Nagasaki or Hiroshima yourself to look at the devastation.
I went to Yokohama for 1 week, slept in a silk factory overnight. Then we went to Tokyo, and I was there for 3 weeks. Then we went back to the United States.
Did you record any reports that people were giving you back there? Or did you hear any of the people mentioning?
No, we didn't have recorders in those days.
Well, did you hear from any people of Tokyo concerning the H-bomb? Did any of the locals talk about it?
No, just that one person I talked to you about. That's, he had his table of gods, you know, little statues, you know, Buddha, I guess Shinto, Teo, Confucius. Then the emperor, he had all these gods. He says, well, one fails me, I'll call on the next god. But now they all failed me. Now we look to you Americans, what are we to believe in? And that's when MacArthur said he needed 2,000 missionaries to go to Japan, because they're ready and they were ripe. But they never came.
No?
No. Well, I'm sure certain some came, but I mean, he didn't get the 2,000 he wanted. And that's what I found out about him. But when I was in Tokyo, I don't know how this happened, but I found out a place where there was a church meeting. they were real Christians. And so I went there, and they sang the same hymns that we sang, of course, in Japanese language, you know. And but they were the great hymns of the faith, you know, Rock of Ages, Old Rugged Cross, and I forget what others were. But I was so moved and touched by this little group, maybe not more than 10 people. There was such a reverence there. I mean, I felt the presence of the Lord, and of course, I didn't understand the preaching, but I knew that the Lord was in their midst. Some missionary, our missionaries, were had some fruit for their labors, and they had a place of meeting.
So even amongst the enemy, what we considered the enemy, there were people of God.
Yeah. Just a small bit, maybe 10 people. That may have been the only church in Tokyo.
Yeah, that was...
You're getting this on tape, right?
Yeah.
Okay, because...
Well, no, I'm not getting any of this on tape. It's all going on a hard drive.
A hard drive, okay. I'm using the...
But this was after the signing of the treaty.
Oh, yeah.
And so this small group of 10, like you said, that one guy, his gods had failed him, and he was ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, apparently this small group of 10 was there for anybody that wanted to hear.
I have no recollection of how I found out about it, or where they met, or how I got there, or what time it was, but I was there.
And I suspect that if an American Christian who's there for a couple of days finds out about them,
they could find out.
Probably the whole town knew they were there.
Probably.
Yeah. You know? It's not like God didn't have a witness, and it's not like those people didn't know where to find the truth.
That's right. Absolutely. Now, they had a hospital there, and there's a chapel in the hospital. They had services, but it wasn't anything like this group I found. And so that was a real blessing to me. As what he said, you know, that God has a witness, he has a remnant, he has believers. So if I knew about it, and I'm just an American, certainly... Those who lived there, they knew about it. I mean, they had opportunity to, if they were seeking the Lord, to be in a place of believers. But I never been in another service I can remember where I felt the reverence and the presence of the Lord as in that group. I mean, they had to be on their knees and right with God because of all the troubles. Think of it if you were a citizen of Tokyo and in this war, and they drop these bombs. I mean, what is your resource but for God himself? You know, and I'm sure it had an effect that drew them closer to the Lord. They were so much in prayer, and everything was so real to them. Nothing artificial, you know, nobody's making any jokes or laughing. They were really reverent before God.
God can even use a war to draw people to himself.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking about, how does this fit in with Memorial Day? You know, we don't remember the soldiers who were lost, but we can remember those who were saved, or not spiritually saved, but I mean those who were spared fighting and could have lost their lives. So this is what we can remember by the bombs, that the bombs had the effect to bring about the resolution of the war and to bring about the victory that spared all these men that were facing death. So that could be a memorial in that sense.
All right, you want to wrap it up? You can talk about this all night.
Yeah.
I've got enough information to edit, I think.
I think by
having him talk a little bit more, I was able to get a few snippets out of that. That he didn't mention before. You didn't mention about, you know, MacArthur wanting 2,000. I think our best...
One thing I was so surprised about and learned in Tokyo was to see their poverty. When we went through our lines after we had our meals... There'll be a bunch of guys that had their tin cans ready to get our leftovers. And this is all they had. And also in our group, there was a boy who was about 10 years of age, and he was an orphan. But the group took him in, and he took care of the cars. They showed him how to change tires and things like that. And he slept there, and they fed him. But then when we left, and we told him the next day we're going to leave, he had tears in his eyes. He called me Charlie-san, and he just had tears because this was his home. This was his family. Now where does he go? Mm-hmm. You know. So, I mean, the soldiers are very compassionate to those who are in need, especially an orphan boy.